Okay, Ruth chapter 1, verses 19 through 22. Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem, and it happened, when they had come to Bethlehem, that all the city was excited because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" But she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. May God add his blessing to the reading of his word.
There's an old expression that says, the darkest night is just before, can you finish that? Just before the dawn. I don't know whether that's scientifically accurate, but it's an interesting little proverb. What it's saying is, don't despair. No matter how dark the night, the dawn will come. As we turn to our text this morning, Naomi is in a very dark time in her life. We're going to see the darkness of her emotions. Then we're going to see the darkness of her soul. And then we're going to see the darkness just before the dawn. We pick up the story today where Naomi and Ruth made their way back to Bethlehem. Bethlehem was Naomi's ancestral home. She and her family had left Bethlehem 10, maybe 12, maybe 15 years earlier. We really don't know the exact timeline there. They went to Moab to find relief from famine. Instead, they found death. It was in Moab that her husband Elimelech died, and then her two sons died, and then she's left alone with her two daughters-in-law. She decides it's time to go back to Bethlehem. The daughters-in-law want to go back with her. She persuades Orpah, the one daughter-in-law, to stay in Moab, but she couldn't persuade Ruth. So Ruth is traveling along with her. In verse 19, they arrive. It says, when they went till they came to Bethlehem, came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem, all the city was moved about them. And they said, "Is this Naomi?" Now this text indicates that Naomi caused quite a stir when she showed up in Bethlehem. The city was moved about them. That phrase, moved about them, translates a Hebrew word that means to make an uproar or to agitate greatly. She caused quite a stir when she showed up in town. That's what the text is saying. It really stirred things up. Just to give you kind of a flavor for what the word means, later in the book of 1 Samuel, we'll see that the Israelites were going to do battle against the Philistines. And somebody got it in their head it might be a good idea if they took the Ark of the Covenant with them. The Ark of the Covenant was the most sacred piece of furniture in Israel. That was the place where God was said to dwell. And they thought, if we take the Ark of the Covenant with us, God will be in our midst. That will give us victory. And so they sent for the Ark. And 1 Samuel 4:4 says, when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came to the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout so that the earth rang again. That phrase, rang again, translates the same word that's in our text. Naomi showed up in town and the town rang again. Now, I don't suppose she caused quite the stir that the Ark of the Covenant did. It's just that when she showed up in town, people took notice. And the reason probably is because Bethlehem was just a little bitty town. In fact, sometime after this, Micah the prophet will write, "Thou Bethlehem Ephrathah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall come he that is to be the ruler in Israel." And what Micah is saying is, Bethlehem, you're such a little inconsequential place, but the greatest person of consequence will be born there. And my point in saying that is, Bethlehem was nothing, just a little bitty town. I suppose it's smaller than Freeman. And if you grew up in Bethlehem, everybody in Bethlehem knew everybody in Bethlehem. Naomi's been gone 10, 12, maybe 15 years, been gone a long time. She shows up again, and the whole town is stirred up. The text says, all the city was moved about them. They said, "Is this Naomi?" Now, here we have a play on words that you don't see in the English, because the translators, for whatever reason, did not translate Naomi's name. They transliterated Naomi's name. Here's the difference. When you translate from one language to another, you find the, well, in this case, you would find the English equivalent for the Hebrew word. That's not what they did. Instead, what they did is they transliterated. In other words, they took that Hebrew word that's in the text, and they substituted the Hebrew letters with English equivalents, and it comes out Naomi. That's not a translation. And so you're not really hearing it like you would hear it if you were to read it in the Hebrew. The word actually means pleasant. So when they asked her, is this pleasant? They weren't asking what mood she was in. They were asking, hey, is this pleasant? That was her name. Now, pleasant may sound like an odd name to you and I, but it's not so unusual. There are people in the United States named Pleasant. How many of you ever heard of the American Girl Doll Company? Did you know the person who founded that is named Pleasant? Pleasant Roland? And so they're just calling her by her name, but her name is Pleasant. Is this pleasant? Well, unfortunately, Pleasant's response wasn't so pleasant, because she says, don't call me Pleasant, call me Mara, for the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. Now, the word Mara, again, is not a translation. It's a transliteration. If you were hearing this text read in the Hebrew, you'd hear that same word. Probably a different pronunciation because they tended to emphasize the second syllable, so it was probably Mara. But it's the same, essentially the same word. What that word means is bitter. So if you were listening to it in the Hebrew, here's how it would come out. The woman said, is this pleasant? But Pleasant said, do not call me pleasant. Instead, call me bitter, because the Almighty has made me very bitter. And with this, Naomi opens up a window to her heart so we can kind of see what's going on. She's had a rough several years. They moved to Moab as an escape. First thing that happens is her husband dies. And then when it looks like things are turning around and doing well and her sons are getting established, both of her sons die and she's left alone. And now Pleasant has become a bitter old woman. Let's think about that word bitter for a moment. You know, it's interesting. This is true in the Hebrew as well, that when we use the word bitter, generally we think of something that's bitter to the taste. And it's funny, the kind of concepts we relate to taste. That person left a bad taste in my mouth. What they did wasn't in very good taste. That was galling. Those are the same kinds of expressions, and it's true in the Hebrew as well. Bitter, it doesn't taste good. It's an awful thing. When a person gets bitter, they tend to turn their anger toward the person who has wronged them or the person whom they think has wronged them. The bitter person is negative. They talk about how bad things are or how bad another person is. They tend to complain and push other people away. When a bitter person is asked, is this pleasant? They respond by saying, don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter. And you know, as try as I might, I can't find a way to say that just doesn't sound rude. Is this pleasant? Oh, don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter. That's just rude. If you were one of the women who hadn't seen Naomi in 10 or 12 years, maybe you used to be great friends. Naomi disappears. She shows back up, and you're excited to see her. Oh, Pleasant, it's so good to see you. Oh, don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter. Kind of pushes you away, doesn't it? Any of you ever had somebody respond rudely to you like that? It's pretty off-putting. Naomi needs to read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, by Dale Carnegie. It would help her at this point. But it's a dark time for Naomi. Maybe at one time the name Pleasant described her, but it doesn't describe her now, does it? Bitterness is a horrible thing because it makes the bitter person miserable, and it makes the people around them miserable as well. Which is probably why the Apostle Paul told the Ephesians, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Don't nurse bitterness. Put it away. Have nothing to do with it. The writer of Hebrews said much the same thing in Hebrews 12:15. He said, see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no one be like a bitter root springing up and causing trouble. That phrase, a bitter root springing up and causing trouble, that's kind of an interesting expression. It speaks of a plant that once its root gets established, you just can't get rid of it because it tends to take things over. Several years ago, I was driving through the state of Virginia, and along the highway, I saw all these patches of wild bamboo. Bamboo's kind of cool. You know, it grows really high, and it's really thick, and I thought, you know, that's you can't see through that. I ought to just get some bamboo and plant it along my property line as a shield against my neighbors. I thought that sounded like a great idea. How about you? So then I've learned that before I do something like that, I Google it. I love Google. And I asked Google, is this a good idea? And Google said, no, not a good idea. And I read articles like this. This comes from HGTV.com. It says, looking for the perfect privacy screen for shielding your backyard from nosy neighbors? For many, the quick, and I do mean quick, solution is bamboo. Big mistake. Bamboo is one of the world's most invasive plants. Once established, it is literally next to impossible to control. The sprouts that shoot up from the ground each spring day can grow 12 inches a day. 12 inches. Kind of gives a new meaning to watching the grass grow, doesn't it? The underground roots of bamboo, which can easily reach 15 feet tall, can travel as far as 20 feet or more from the original clump. I never planted bamboo, and I don't ever intend. Because when I plant something in my yard, I want to control it. I don't want it to control me. The same is true in my heart. When I allow something in my heart, I want to control that something. I don't want that something to control me. Unfortunately for Naomi, her bitterness is controlling her heart. She's in a very, very dark place emotionally. She's become a bitter old woman. Now, I don't think she's all that old. She's maybe 50, 55 years old, but she's bitter, maybe prematurely so. That's the darkness of her emotions. Let's look next at the darkness of her soul. This is verse 20. She said unto them, call me not pleasant, call me bitter, for the Almighty. Now let's stop there for a moment. The name that she uses here is Shaddai, which is well translated Almighty or the All-Powerful. So that's her name for God here, the All-Powerful Shaddai. Hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord, notice it's all capital letters. That's the translator's way of telling you that's the tetragrammaton. This is the name for God for which we don't have the vowels, and we don't know how to say it. We don't know if it's Jehovah or Yahweh or something else, but it's the covenant God of Israel. The Lord, the covenant God, has brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, saying, the Lord, there's that name again. This is the third time she's used the name of God. First Shaddai, then Jehovah or Yahweh, and Yahweh again. The Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty, Shaddai, has afflicted me. Notice in the span of these two verses, she calls God's name four times. The name Shaddai or Almighty is kind of, it's like bookends. It starts the expression, it closes the expression. In between, she calls on or mentions the name of Yahweh, the name of Jehovah. Every time she mentions God's name, she's blaming him for something that went wrong in her life. Notice that first expression there in verse 20. Don't call me pleasant, call me bitter, for the Almighty had dealt very bitterly with me. Now, that's not a bad translation, but another way to translate it is, the Almighty has made me very bitter. Boy, talk about darkness in your soul. God, the Almighty, has made me bitter. Let me ask you a question. Does God make people bitter? No. Next question. Do other people make people bitter? No. Who makes a person bitter? They do. That's a choice. You can choose to deal with issues and let them go, or you can choose to nurse them and hold a grudge and become bitter. The choice is yours. God did not make this woman bitter. She chose to be bitter. Yet she's blaming God and accusing him of making her bitter. That's the first accusation. God has made me bitter. Verse 21, I went out full. Yahweh has brought me home again empty. Now that first phrase, I went out, is referring to when I left here, I went to Moab. And at that time, I was full. We're not quite sure what she had in mind when she said that. If what she meant was, I had everything I needed, well, then it's a lie. Because if she had everything she needed, why did she go to Moab? I mean, she went there for food. So she wasn't full, at least her belly wasn't full. Or maybe it's referring to her family. When she left, she had a husband, she had two sons, life looked bright, the future looked hopeful. I went out full, and Yahweh has brought me home empty. Let me just put that in plain English. I went out full, and God took it all away. Wow. I had everything, and God took it all away from me. You see the darkness of her soul? God has made me bitter. God has taken everything away from me. Notice the next phrase, middle of verse 21. Why then do you call me pleasant, seeing that Yahweh hath testified against me? This is a legal term. It pictures a courtroom where someone's taking the stand to testify against someone. God has turned against me. He's made me bitter. He's taken everything I had. He's turned against me. And finally, the Almighty has afflicted me. Now that phrase, afflicted me, can be translated, he has broken me. God has broken me. Well, I'll agree with her at this point. She's a broken woman, isn't she? I don't think God is the one who broke her, but she's broken. She's in a dark place. She's looking at her life and she's saying, look what God has done to me. He's made me bitter. He's taken away everything I had. He's spoken and turned against me, and he's broken me. Yeah, she's a broken, bitter, old lady. We've seen the darkness of her emotions. She's bitter. We've seen the darkness of her soul. She's blaming God. It's all God's fault. Now, let's see the darkness just before the dawn. This is verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. Let's contrast that last phrase, the beginning of the barley harvest, with the first verse of the chapter, shall we? Came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. No barley harvest then. That famine was indicative of God's judgment. Israel had sinned against him, and God is punishing them for their sins. It appears that along the way, Israel has repented, and now God is blessing them again, and now it's the beginning of the barley harvest. Things are turning around in Israel, and things are just about to turn around for Naomi. She can't see it yet. She's in a very, very dark place. But if she can just hold on a little while longer, God is going to turn it around on her behalf, and the sun is going to rise. Now, see, we know that, don't we? Because we've read the rest of the book. At this point in Naomi's life, she doesn't know that. All she knows is that she's a broken old woman, and she's wondering, where is God in my brokenness? God is right there about to bring the sun up on her life, and it's going to turn around. The darkest night comes just before the dawn. For Naomi, the dawn is about to break. You may be in a very dark spot this morning, wondering, what is God doing in my life? It's dark. Hold on. Hold on. The darkest night comes just before the dawn. The dawn will break. Don't despair. Don't give up. In God's time, he'll turn things around. Let's pray together, shall we? Father, I thank you for this promise that we see illustrated in this wonderful story of Ruth. We're sorry for the bitterness and the brokenness that Naomi experienced. I pray we might learn from her experience, that we not follow her example. That we, by your grace, might, as Paul said, put all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking put away from us. I pray that we, as the writer of Hebrews said, would not allow the root of bitterness to grow up in our hearts. I pray you give us the faith and the grace to hold on and hold out for that day when you turn things around, and we would be found trusting in you at that time. Bless each one in this place who's hurting this morning. Give them grace and strength to carry on. Give them the faith to look for that time when you'll turn things around. For Jesus' sake and in his name, amen.